from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is meeting in Kodiak this week. We learn more about the walrus alert we told you about last week and sampling salmon for dollars. All that and digging up a really stinky mess in Dutch Harbor. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders, and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is meeting this week in Kodiak. The council's advisory groups also get together. One is the Scientific and Statistical Committee, and the other is the Advisory Panel, or AP. KMXT's Kayla Drost dropped by the Elks Lodge in Kodiak Tuesday morning to watch the advisory panel at work and find out how it contributes to the council process.
I have questions regarding tables 4-1 and 4-5.
Advisory panel member Teresa Peterson from Kodiak speaks during a discussion about the North Pacific Observer Program, which monitors fisheries activity and data. Peterson says three Observer Program representatives are speaking to the advisory panel that morning.
Each agenda item has very experienced analysts who present the discussion papers and are available for questions to help clarify the issues.
Peterson, who is the Kodiak Outreach Coordinator with the Alaska Marine Conservation Council and has been a panel member for 7 years, says she applied because she wanted to engage more in the discussion at the table. She says she also uses her position to encourage community involvement.
I really think that this council process is structured to provide ample community industry input, and so that's part of what I try to do is, you know, kind of make sure I can serve as a conduit, communicate with folks in my community about what's going on in the council arena and how they can participate.
Peterson says 21 industry stakeholders from Alaska, Oregon, and Washington sit on the panel, and four are from Kodiak. She explains in order to join, applicants send a letter of interest to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, and council members decide who to appoint. I stop AP Chairman Ernie Weiss to ask him about the panel and how it contributes to meetings. Weiss is from Anchorage and works as a natural resources director for the Aleutians East Borough.
What is unique about the AP that makes it important for the process?
We are kind of a sounding board and kind of a pre-council for people to come talk to, and here we hear them out and we get our take on it, and that might be a different take than the council gets. But for the most part, the people on the AP are a little bit closer to the ground and to the people that are most affected by the decisions of the council.
How much does the council take the advice and the feedback of the AP?
Well, we are real happy when they just take our decisions and run with it. They don't always do that. But sometimes they do. It just depends on the topic of the day. A lot of times they'll take our advice. Sometimes they ignore our advice. And sometimes we have competing advice. We have a minority, and they might take the minority's advice.
The advisory panel meets 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day through Saturday, and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meets until Tuesday. I'm Kayla Deroche.
One especially interesting item that came up at the SSC and AP pre-meetings this week was data that showed Bristol Bay was warming significantly faster than the rest of the Bering Sea. The bottom temperature trend in Bristol Bay has been steadily upward, more so than in the rest of the Bering Sea. Where a region has exhibited a faster rate of warming, as also is the case in the Gulf of Maine and the North Atlantic, there can be significant impacts on fishery stocks and models. According to John Sacton of Seafood.com, warming there has affected lobster and cod in the Gulf of Maine and could point to possible fisheries troubles in Bristol Bay in the future.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The new walrus haul-out in Bristol Bay that we told you about last week could create some problems for Ugashik and Igigik salmon fishermen, but right now the Department of Fish and Game says they'll run the fishery business as usual.
The new haul-out was spotted this spring, first by residents flying over the coast of the Alaska Peninsula, then confirmed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. No one is sure yet why the walrus are there, but hope that they might go elsewhere is running thin. Dan Pepin is a pilot and wildlife biologist with the Alaska Peninsula Basharoff Refuge and has been keeping an eye on the walrus by air this spring.
I've seen them anywhere from 300 to 2,000 at one time on the beach at Cape Grigg. I mean, it's anybody's guess how long they're going to be there.
On a flight last week, Pepin says he counted 1,500. While the new and somewhat more accessible walrus haul-out might be welcomed by some, that spot is awfully close to the Ugashik District boundaries, says Fish and Game Area Manager Paul Solomon.
Looking at the pictures, it seems to be on the, there's a bluff right on the north line of Ugashik, and it seems to be towards the north end of it. And my best estimate at this point, they're about a half mile north of the north line.
When the sockeye fishing in Ugashik got real hot last year, there were over 300 drift permits registered in the district, though some of those were doubled up on one boat. Add in the tenders and other transiting vessels, and concerns grow for the safety of those walrus hauling out near the line and feeding wherever it is they feed. Walrus are protected from disturbance by the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act. There are guidelines published by the Fish and Wildlife Service for how close vessels can come to haulouts, what operations are not allowed nearby, and how much sound can be generated. Paul Solomon says the fleet needs to familiarize itself with the rules, and fingers crossed, Ugashik and Igigik fishing will happen normally.
Well, as of right now, we're still planning on business as usual. So we're not planning on making any changes to the way we approach the season at this point. We are putting a lot of the onus on the fishermen.
Solomon says the consequences of fishing boats triggering a stampede or walrus showing up dead from obvious fishing-related causes could be severe. The federal government has jurisdiction over enforcement to protect the mammals. Solomon says he's hoping it's a non-issue. Commercial fishing in the district opened Wednesday. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Fish and Game is sponsoring a project to gather data from subsistence-caught king salmon on the Yukon River this summer. The project is contracted out to Spearfish Research in Fairbanks. The company is run by Cody Straith and Paige Drobny, who have a second life as long-distance sled dog racers. This year, they became the first husband and wife pair to finish the Iditarod. Straith says the sampling project began during the last few years in which subsistence fishing for kings was open and is all about getting more information about the condition of the fish that are returning and where they're headed.
It was a TCC project. I think it got funding maybe from Fish and Game. But the idea is to empower fishermen to take samples from their own catch, and then those samples are then turned over to Fish and Game so that Fish and Game can use that data for management.
Another below-average return of kings is predicted this year, but Fish and Game managers have indicated that they would like to schedule limited subsistence openings to provide some opportunities to catch kings. But managers have also reserved the right to keep subsistence fishing closed if the run comes back even weaker than expected. With so much uncertainty, Straith has to be ready to make changes to the project on short notice.
I'm just like the fishermen, I'm just sitting here waiting to see what happens. I mean, they tell us that they thought there was going to be more openings, but they also said that, you know, it's all based on the numbers coming in, so I kind of have to sit by the computer and watch the numbers come in and then try to get my tickets and run out to meet up with people and make sure everything's going okay.
Fishermen who participate in the program will be offered $7 for each fish sampled. Stray says he's not in a position to comment about whether the payment creates a financial incentive to over-harvest the struggling king salmon stock, but based on his experience as a researcher, he feels that some kind of payment or incentive is necessary.
People need an incentive to do this work. It does take a little bit of time. And I think in the early days, I think it was hard to get folks to help without some sort of incentive.
The project intends to sample between 150 and 200 kings in each community, involving at least five fishermen in each location. The communities involved are Tanana, Ruby, Galena, Koyukuk, Nulato, Caltag, Russian Mission, Marshall, St. Mary's, Mountain Village, Emonic, and Alakanuk. Taking the required samples involves pulling some scales, cutting off a fin, and noting the gender and length of each fish. Copper River sockeye has slowed down compared to last year's run. The in-season timing chart through week 23 shows total landings of 368,000 fish. Last year on that date, 726,000 sockeye had been caught, and the five-year average is 868,000. Jeremy Botts, area management biologist for Fish and Game in Cordova, though, told Seafood.com that it's still early in the season. Escapement is within accepted ranges for the preseason forecast, currently at 252,000 on June 6th, with a preseason estimate of 245,000 for that day. The opening last Thursday produced an additional 55,000 reds and 800 kings. There was another opening Monday of this week, although some adjustments in area are being made to reduce the amount of king salmon being caught. Unicee is cleaning up its 30-year-old underwater seafood waste pile. Vice President of Corporate Affairs Chris Pleyontz says the company is taking action now because the Environmental Protection Agency has issued a consent decree ordering them to remove the legacy waste pile and disperse it 6 to 7 miles out at sea. He expects the dredging project to be completed by mid-July. Then the outfall area will be left to settle. After 2 months, underwater survey equipment will be brought in to ensure that the pile had been successfully removed. The wholesale price of imported raw material product roe surged 10% in Japan on lackluster catch in the U.S. and Russia. The price of the mainstay supply from U.S. factory ships has climbed 10% to 1,100 yen per kilo. The amount of roe offered in the auction in the U.S. in the spring was only 70% of the volume in the same period last year, while supply from Russia also dwindled 20%. About 90% of the pollock roe produced in the U.S. and Russia are exported to Japan, where it is the raw material for spiced mentai roe and tarako roe. It is also in increasing demand for pasta sauce and other uses, while the demand for the gift products is seeing a downturn. Industry analysts point out that some Japanese producers may move to decrease the amount of roe per product they sell, which might affect a price rise.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvests for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KMXT's Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, KDLG's Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Seafood.com's John Sacton, KIYU's Tim Badoni in Galena, and KUCB's Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.